support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for community radio syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Find links at the website kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio is on Facebook at facebook.com/kboofreeculture radio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Juneteenth, celebrating the end of slavery, is coming this Sunday. Moving on, we'll be honoring Juneteenth this Friday, right after the noon news to 1:30. We'll be hearing from Laura Love, Rhiannon Giddens, Odetta, Paul Robeson, and many others. Join host Don Jacobson to celebrate with music the end of slavery and support the struggle to end racism in this country. That's this coming Friday, right after the noon news, only on KBOO.
Radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for practice.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
watch MTV or listen to some of the popular radio stations, you might be familiar with the term hyphy.
I think it's the Bay Area's culture. It's Oakland's culture and it's the Bay Area's culture.
Hyphy is a lifestyle. It's the way we move, talk, walk.
And it's an energy that's around everyone, you know, that binds us.
Many agree Oakland sideshows are growing larger, more violent, and are scaring people.
If you were at the party and the song came on and we all going dumb, then we all going dumb.
Hyphy is an energy. Hyphy is a feeling. Hyphy is the impact grunge had, blues, and any other genre of music that was totally taking over the nation.
Hyphy music is a reflection of the people. So if you listen to a hyphy song, they might be talking about gangster stuff that happens in the streets, but it's just a reflection of what they seen yesterday or what they seen earlier that day, right?
So much going on, man. We just losing friends. People was getting killed. People was dying.
It's definitely fire, that hyphy movement, that hyphy spirit that exists. So we're going to rebel. We're going to take over the streets. We're going to commandeer the streets, and we don't care what they say. We're not just partying, but we're partying in spite of what you're trying to force us to do.
All of it is about liberation. It's about getting it out and celebrating it. And it's beautiful.
The ingredients and the residual impact will live forever.
It was a wild-ass time.
It's hard to recreate because it was an era, it was a time, you know what I mean? It's a time capsule.
Hyphy is the act of being free. Hyphy is a movement.
Hyphy is a lifestyle.
Hyphy is powerful. Tracademic. Tell me when to go. Tell me when to go. Time when to go. Tell me when to go.
Hard Knock Radio, Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. What you were listening to was a trailer from a movie that I think many people in the Bay, or a documentary that many people in the Bay are very happy has been made. It is part of a much larger trend in which regions, whether you're talking about Detroit or Philly or Houston or New Orleans, many people who have been involved with the evolution of hip hop are now telling their own stories, looking at the uniqueness and the specialness of their particular cities. And for people in the Bay, the hyphy movement was a very special time coming at the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, it's been a while, and we thought that maybe something would have been told about this story, but a gentleman who attended SF State decided to take it upon himself, get everybody together, make a documentary, and it's one that's being well received. Today, we're going to talk about the hyphy movement. We're going to talk about this documentary, and we're going to talk with some of the people that are featured in the documentary. So, Larry Madrigal, welcome to the show. And let me start off with you, man. SF State, man, that's where I teach, you know? And we were just talking, you said, you were at the hip hop class, I think, that Ricky Vincent or Donna Lisa was teaching.
Shepherd, I think, actually.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Sorry. Right.
Yeah.
So I think it was the year that a bunch of us came through, including yep. Trackademics. And mm-hmm. was that your first spark to maybe do the documentary? Because we're going back to 2008, or what led to you saying, you know what, this story needs to be told?
Yeah, definitely, man. It was like, definitely that was a big spark for sure. Like, I always was a big appreciator of hip hop. I'm a amateur hobbyist beat maker myself. So, and then I grew up in the Bay Area. I grew up in Antioch and went straight to SF State. So I've just been in the Bay my whole life. So it's like you're surrounded by that local type of hip hop. And I was just starting my 20s when the hyphy movement was really kicking off. So that was really the spark in general, just being in the place at the right time. And then, yeah, SF State, as you know, DVD is just like the education you get at SF State is very unique. You know, you get exposed to a lot. And then hip hop classes in general existing at that time was such a cool experience. So I think it's just a combination of being in the Bay at the time and going to SF State and meeting Trackademics. It's crazy that now Tracks, I got to relink up with Tracks after I saw him as a guest lecturer, and then he helped make the score, and he's in the film quite a bit. So it's all just been a kind of a crazy trip. Yeah.
How hard was it to make the film? You know, was it because you're talking about a special time, you're talking about a lot of information and different interpretations mm-hmm. of what hyphy is and isn't.
Yeah, it was really difficult. And it was a very different film from what, I mean, it wasn't, we didn't have funding or anything. So we made it as, it was supposed to just be like a passion project short film, like 5-minute short film. But as we met people, they'd introduce us to other people. And then like each interview would kind of lead us on a different path. Like even I'd say like early on Penn, we interviewed Penn and that completely changed the way we were going to approach the movie, you know, just so much knowledge. And it was like writing a paper or something, which is like research on research and reaching out to people. So, but then also the pressure of like, it's such an important special thing to so many people in the Bay Area. I was really nervous, you know, to try and get it right and try and get as much as I could into it. And you know, it's not the only movie about hyphy that's going to come out. It's just one of many, hopefully, to continue to explore the subject. But yeah, it's a very difficult subject matter to explore, and I hope I did a decent job. But yeah, it was hard. It took 4 years to make. Yeah.
Okay, Pendarvis Harshaw. Emmy Award winning Pendarvis Harshaw.
What's up, bro?
Good. You're featured, one of the people that's featured in the documentary. Put on your journalist hat and then we'll dig deeper with some of the other participants. But what do you think people need to know about hyphy? How would you define it? Why was this documentary important?
I think the first thing is that something that Larry just said about, you know, this is one of many tales. You know, and this is something that can be looked at from many angles. This one in particular is unique. This documentary in particular is unique in that it brings together people from a lot of different backgrounds. You got the dancers, the musicians, myself, I'm a journalist, the photographer speaking. You know, D-Ray's contributions are incredible to this piece. And so kind of quilting all that together in one chunk is really, you know, refreshing, because it can really bring you back on all different levels, kind of hit all sensory glands, if you will, you know? And so that's what I appreciated about it. And then what should people know about the hyphy movement? Is that kind of, like, there's so much to know. Like, what you want me to choose one thing?
Well, if somebody comes up and goes, man, I'm seeing this documentary about hyphy, what's hyphy? What do you say to them?
Well, I said it all started a long time ago, even before the Panthers, back when Black folks was organizing unions. You know what I'm saying? Like what? There's a lot. This energy been in the Bay since the dirt was laid, you know what I'm saying?
So it's an energy.
Exactly, and it continues to this day, and it's not called the same thing. Like, definitely it's not, people ain't making hyphy music in 2022, but that energy is for sure still there.
Okay, what do you think people should really peep in the documentary that you feel really kind of underscores something that's important?
I really liked looking at the photos and seeing who was in the background. Like, there's a lot of photos where it's just like eclectic, a lot of different people in it, and I would pause throughout watching I was watching it on my computer, and I would pause and look at like different people in the background and the fashion of the time, and knowing that this didn't happen in a vacuum, you know what I'm saying? Like, there was a lot happening in the community and society. There was 2006 was the high water mark for homicides in Oakland at that, you know, for that era beyond 1992, and so like knowing that that's the backdrop for this cultural movement is it says that, yeah, again, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. So pay attention to what's happening in the background as well. I'll say that.
Appreciate that. Gary Archer, let me bring you in. You've been an integral part of this, you know, working very closely with many of the artists, including Mr. Fab, who is an architect. And hopefully we get Fab on. Fab's in Boston right now as we speak. So we may have a time thing. But what do you think we should know about the hyphy movement and your, what do you think people should get out of this documentary?
What I think people should get is the love amongst the chaos. Like, it was a chaotic time, right? It was a chaotic time in Oakland without the music, without anything. The murder rate was up. There was a lot of things going on during this time of the early 2000s, the passing of the guard from the mob to the hyphy music. And we never even asked for the music or the moniker. But like, we never asked for this to be called that. We never said, yo, call our music that, none of that. It was, you know, the place it came from was, you know, was a slang word from the Bay, meaning something uncontrollable, right? Like, oh, that's Manny over there. So, you know, the way we flip it and the way the world does just makes it a little easier to digest. But the main part about the hyphy movement was the love, Dave, like from the artist to the fan, to the journalist, to the photographer, to the person working at this gas station, to almost like, I equated to back when everyone was breakdancing in the Bay Area. There was this pride, this monstrous pride about people that they couldn't wait to tell people where they were from. Like monstrous pride, Dave. Not like, hey, I'm from Oakland, or I'm no, monstrous. And it was an exciting time. Like normal people and nobody's got to be somebody's. And I thought that was very important about the movement.
What I remember about the hyphy movement, and I want to build off of you know, what you said, love in the midst of chaos, and what Penn was saying with energy that was already there. I remember the Bay was also floundering at that time. There was recognition going on all over the country, and the Bay wasn't necessarily getting any sort of shine. And within hip hop, there's always been these moments of intentionality where people come together and say, we're going to collectively try to do something, you know, and there's those moments where it happened. And if I remember correctly, there was a movement, and I hope we get Fab on, because there were people like him was like, we're the new Bay. Remember? Remember? Okay. And
oh, yeah.
And folks was like, New Bay, because there was like Drew Down and 40 and some of these older cats, like, what do you mean New Bay? That's, we're still here. And then it was kind of like emerging, you know, where people kind of, I don't know if there was a secret meeting, if it was something natural, but there seemed to be a lot of intentionality. It might've been 40 saying, let me get Keek the Sneak to be in my song. It might've been, you know, the type of things that were being done with Thiz and Mac Dre, but it definitely seemed like people were being very strategic and intentional to put their foot down so that the rest of the world would see some sort of unity and it would be some collectivity in terms of the energy and the direction that people were going. Am I wrong in remembering it that way? Or is that
rose-colored? It was exactly that way, Dave. Exactly in that form. I want to say the year was 2003.
Yes, 2003.
Right before Fab's first album, right before the Nig Latin album came out, we actually met with you and you were like, yo, you're amazing. Your concepts, you know, his album was real, you know, real above his time. His soul was old, right? And we were running around just trying to get attention by everyone big in the Bay. You know, we're from the Bay, so we're fans of all these people we talk about, from Keek the Sneak, the Two Shorts, to the E-40s, and, you know, everyone. Drew Downs, we're Yuck Mouse, we're fans, like, really, literally fans. And we're trying to get their attention just to, you know, like any other artist, just listen to our music. Just, hey, you know, like playing reindeer games, that sort of thing. And then they weren't having it, none of it. They weren't having not a piece of it, not even, like, but it's not like now where it was easy to get a hold of people. It wasn't like social media. So it was like, you had to go through so and through so and through so. And so, you know, we're like, you know what? We're the new Bay. And we collectively, it was Fab, Locksmith,
yeah.
And Clyde Carson, Haji Springer even, and Preach Martin. We kind of came together as like 6-7 people and said, yo, we're the new Bay. And it was kind of, you know, I kind of had the keys to the industry, meaning I knew how it worked. So like I was the music spreader of the movement. So I was like, you know what? I'll start collectively putting this music out, helping people not put it out, but send it to the DJs. And instantly, I want to say within 1 week of us saying we're the new Bay is when we had meetings with everyone that we ever wanted to talk to. They were calling us saying, hey, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. And then, you know, we had a secret meeting up at the grill. In Oakland. And they were like, hey man, we're all one now, man. I'm like, oh, that's all, we're good. We're all one. And it wasn't like, oh, we're gonna call it this now. It was like, no, but that was the time where the Bay got in pocket again. Like it was in pocket during the Master P time, I think, and then it got back in pocket again during this time.
Right. And it was a moment of intentionality.
For sure. It was an accident, for sure.
There were many parts to the hyphy movement. There was a car aspect to it, you know, which is highlighted in the film. There, of course, is the music aspect to it, you know, the Rick Rocks, the Trackademics, you know, the tracks of Millions May Rest in Peace. The artists themselves, Jacka, who was featured, rest in peace. Mac Dre, of course, you can't talk about Hyphy without that. But one of the undertold stories, and I'm glad that you, Larry, made it a point to feature them, were the dancers, the Turfin. And I think, you know, my understanding and my observation of hip hop is that the dance is often overlooked, but it's also an anchoring force. I mean, if we talk about hip hop in New York, right? We knew the dancers before we heard the rappers, if you really think about it. 2020 shows up in the Bronx with cameras, not to see people flowing on the mic, but they're like, who are these people spinning on their heads, right? I mean, go look at the records. That's what they were talking about. Here in the Bay, you know, we're now just starting to have a lot of people look at the rich history of the dancers, looking at the Black Resurgence, the Black Messengers. You're all over, you know, Pendarvis just won an award for, you know, or got nominated for the documentary on Bay Dance, and there's a lot going on. But one of the shining things to me was the turf dancing that has come out of that, and Ice Cold, you and your group Turf Fiends, which is featured in the documentary, I think is an important story. So how did you relate to Hyphy? Was turfing something that you all said that we have a dance that is music? Was it something in existence? What's the kind of short and long story of turfing and your group, the Turf Fiends?
Well, honestly, the Turf Fiends was started by Looney, Zach, Taz, and Flex. They was the first original four Turf Fiends, and then they recruited First Lady, which was Tracy. Mm-hmm. And I joined the team in 2006. Like, me, Chunky, and me, Ninja joined in like a 3-month span, like in that year. And just during the hype, just during the whole Hyphy movement period, like, I just been a part of it because, you know, I was going to parties and everything. I was just been to, like, I was going to all the parties and trying to be at music video shoots. Like, I wasn't like a dancer like that until like I got influenced by everybody. And then I seen Shep. Shep was one of my favorite dancers. It's like, after I seen him, like, as far as battling goes, it's like, yeah, I had to really become like what they call a turf dancer. Because before that, my brother had inspired me to do everything that I ever wanted to do in life, my big brother. So he was a dancer as well. So that's how I picked up on just the whole dancer aspect of my life. And turfing was started by, like, the hood cats up in, you feel me, the OGs, the people that was running the streets was actually the people who started the style. So people in West Oakland, North Oakland, and East Oakland all had different styles based off where they was from because everybody moved different. You know what I'm saying? My boy T7 said that in the We Were Hyphy documentary. He mentioned that. But out here, it was just like being a turf dancer during the Hyphy movement was way different from what it is now because, you know, you had to watch your back. You had to be careful, and you know the energy was high. So, you know, you had to really survive out there, man. It was like a real survival game at the same time, man, because we lost a lot of lives back then.
Right.
Like, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the ways that the nation got introduced to turfing was the famous video Dancing in the Rain.
Right.
People can look that up. That's where you're all up on 90th and MacArthur. You're dancing. And the stories were varied. You know, one story said somebody just lost a loved one, you know, somebody right. was killed, you know, somebody said it was a gang thing, you know, we didn't know, right? So you all tell the story. What was that about? And describe, you know, your understanding once people started to see that dance. Why were you all dancing in the rain on 90th and MacArthur, you know?
Okay, so I was actually shooting a dance video the night that the car crash had happened on 90th and MacArthur.
It was a car crash?
It was a car crash. That's where the dude, D Rich, the dude we was dancing for, my D Rail's cousin. D Rail's the skinny light-skinned dude with the white t-shirt in the video.
Right.
So that was his cousin, and D Rail is my cousin. So, you know, he called me that morning, and I kind of ran up the street from 88th and International and ran all the way to MacArthur. And we shot that video, you know, just as a as a memory piece, you know, just for the family, because the Turf Ninjas was famous for shooting RP videos for people. Like, if you look now, like back in the day, we used to shoot a lot of RP videos, but this specific video touched a lot of people's hearts. I'm still confused as to why. Like, I can still watch that video these days and still wonder why. Like, I don't even know why it hit so big. Like, everybody has a different version of why that video touched them and why that video is what it is today. Like, I still can't really understand why the impact is so big on that video.
Right. Well, I think, you know, and anybody can jump in. Penn, you know, you talk about it's a feeling. When I saw that video the first time, it wasn't like the moves were super duper amazing. I mean, they were, but it was like, damn, I gotta watch this to learn the moves, you know? And it wasn't because of the way y'all were dressed, and it wasn't because you was in the rain. There was something about that video that you could feel, you know? And I think everybody I've talked to that's seen that is like, yo, there's something about that video. We could feel this energy. And anybody can jump in on this. I think when we talk about hyphy, what I think makes this time so special wasn't because of any one particular thing. It was something that you could feel. That's why when you look back at that time, you're like, man, it was something about it. I think, Gary, you said there was a certain amount of pride. I just remember going to different places and, you know, seeing certain people. It was like, this is us. This is, you know, so want to chime in on that, Penn, about this feeling? And
it's funny. It's funny that I'm talking to you about this. You might not even remember it, bro, but like early on in my journalism career, I pulled up on you at your headquarters, at your house, actually. And we chopped it up for like 2 hours. You told me about like where Tupac lived when he stayed in Oakland, like just things that I didn't know as a young me. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, all right, I got to head out to this video shoot. And it was for a Federation song and they were filming it in Alameda.
That's right.
You were like, what? I'm coming with you. And so like, you know what I'm saying? We both rode out. I was like, damn, I'm with the legend, Davey D, to this. And so that intergenerational connection you talked about earlier, that's what went through my mind. But also the energy of that video shoot, like you know, like in between shots, they didn't really stop. Like people was just going dumb. Like, you know, the music was playing, it was a party and the cameras were just rolling. And that was, it just exemplified the energy of that time of like, yeah, cameras here or not, we gonna do this thing.
But you know, at the same time, if I remember that shoot, Chingo Bling from Houston was up here. And, you know, and Gary, maybe you can talk because you were promoting at the time. At that time that Hyphy was jumping, Screw Music in Houston was jumping. Snap Music in Atlanta was jumping. Minneapolis had a scene. LA was just starting with all their folks. So all these regions seem to be like, you know, we have a voice, we have a generation that wants to speak, and we're all gonna go on this journey. But how do you remember things? And let's talk about this feeling that people had, that it was more than just a particular song or dance or one particular artist, but a whole energy.
The strange part about what you're saying, which was the great part about it, like you said, Chingo Bling was out here, Paul Wall, like we had a lot of, well, what I didn't realize, at least growing up, right, you know, growing up in the Bay Area, you know, we were Bay Area music fans, and you know, I thought we were on an island, like period, just on an island, especially during the early 2000s, the way we felt, you know, we weren't getting our recognition, you know, in the majors, like commercial sort of way, right? So when we started to be able to move around the country just a little bit, just a little bit, like when we had the Fab Band and I brought all my brothers gas hard and we just be, his face be on the side and we driving the city to city, just going crazy, right? And we started to notice how much the world is in love with the Bay Area. Like really in love with the Bay Area, like ties to the Bay Area, like meaning a lot of 16 through 20 year old kids that say, my mom and dad grew up on Master P, grew up on E-40, grew up on Mac Dre. Like they were so proud to meet someone from somewhere that parents were so excited to talk about. Like all the big artists we've ever met, that I've ever met outside of New York, would meet me and be like this. Like,
and
I'm like, how is that even possible? Like, no, you don't understand how much we as artists got from the Bay Area. And I'm like, we didn't even know we were doing it. Like even the industry, even the I want to say, even the people before us, we didn't realize we were doing it. We were just doing what we had to do to get noticed and make a few more dollars to put in our tank to go to the next day, right? And yeah, it was this belongingness that people didn't know us, but they seen us and they thought they did.
Well, around that time, if we're talking about 2006, I think I went to Lebanon, and I was in Beirut, you know, within a club, and somebody, you know, found out that I was from the Bay and was asking me about Bay music, asked me about Hyro and Dell, and, you know, and it was just up on it, and it was just amazing. And I think off record, me and Ice Cold, we were just talking and saying that, you know, something about the Bay seems to kind of resonate with people in a different way. It seems to be aligned with a lot of folks. The rhythm, the attitude, the way that people kind of do things seems to be like, yeah, I can relate to that. That's kind of something, I see myself in that. Larry, let me ask you this. Somebody's, I'm getting some feedback from somewhere, but what are some important things that you really felt needed to be highlighted in the documentary that you brought out? You know, there were a lot of stories, you know, you settled in on a few, but what did you feel like I absolutely need to put in this documentary?
Yeah, I feel like some of the most important things were just trying to, I mean, with any art, especially like with like film, bring something new to the table, you know? And I think diving into the climate and what was going on in the Bay and how that affected the energy of Hyphy was really important to get that in. And that really sparked with like Pendarvis and Dr. Moore really highlighted on that as well. I think that was something I was like, let's talk about this and talk about everything, you know, the slang and the clothes and everything everyone knows, but let's talk about them together, you know? And another thing that personally I was really, just as an aspiring beat maker, I really wanted to get Rick Rock in front of the camera and like learn more about how, cause like, it's crazy, man. He like, he really was a big influence on that early, like that, the bringing the tempo up. So when we were interviewing him, I was just like fascinated. Like I was like taking notes for myself, cause it was just like so cool to hear about how he kind of like brought mob music and that Southern kind of up-tempo, like Miami bass kind of sound together.
Cause he's from Alabama.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So for me, that was that, but yeah.
Anybody want to talk a little bit about the political and social dynamics that existed around Hyphy? Both Pendarvis and Gary alluded to that, and I think you touched upon that as well, Ice Cold. All of you said it was hectic times, but what made it hectic? What was going on at that time that we need to remember? Because sometimes when we look back, we have a sense of nostalgia. We look at things through kind of rose-colored glasses, and also because we may have survived it. But, you know, when we think about it, it was kind of grimy. It was, you know, and there was some losses. I mean, we lost Mac Dre. We lost the Jacka, right? There's other folks that we've lost that may not have been known, you know, that you, as you pointed out, Ice Cold. So there were some challenging times, but what do we need to know so that either one, moving forward, we know how to harness the energy, two, we can correct what needed to be fixed, you know? So anybody want to jump and take that?
I want to say one thing.
This is Ice Cold.
Ice Cold. As I got older, I just kind of realized that all those was kind of like proximity killings, you know? Just happens to be in those areas, and, you know, just being in a area when you're going through something, and you know what I'm saying, and ain't no other way to release. It's like, I even talk to kids now and ask them what they do for fun, and the kids are saying they don't have anything to do. They have nothing to do. These kids are like 15 years old and they have nothing to do for fun. So that turns into instant gang violence, because that's usually the fun. So you know what I'm saying? So I just feel like it's everything that's happening in proximity, because people don't have opportunities to do nothing.
Do you think we learned that lesson? And I mean, that's a good point. You know, do you think we, the society at large, realizes that and have made the steps to change? Or, you know,
go ahead. I don't believe so, because there's not a lot of free stuff. And then the stuff that people do want to get into, they usually don't have the money to pay for it. And then there aren't around the programs that provide what they want to do for free, and they usually don't have people that keep them motivated to do what they want to do. Like me, as far as dancing, like I didn't have a lot of motivation, but I had people that liked to see me dance, but I didn't have a lot of motivation from family. So if I would have had it from family, I would have really wanted to do it way more. But you know, I still had people motivate me. But what if I didn't have those people? You right. know, what if I had no one? You know what I'm saying? I would have fell back into that too, because I was a part of it, you know, but the dance took over everything. Once I realized that, I left that.
Let me ask you this. When I look at some of the early videos that you all did, including the Dancing in the Rain and some of the things that were shown, I think, in the E40 video.
Right.
I see those dance steps today that are being choreographed. I see some of those dance steps on Fortnite in big corporations making millions.
Oh yeah.
I see some of those dance steps being, you know, a part of pop culture with a different name. How do you feel about that? You know, do you think that is that a direct influence of what happened, of what you all did? Are you looking at that and going, that's an Oakland thing that came from us? And you know, and Fortnite has these dances that, you know, you got to pay money to, you know, they make millions off this, you know.
Oh, yeah. They actually credited Chunky with the Smeeze when they put the dance on Fortnite, you know.
Oh, they did. OK.
Yeah, they credited for him for that. And me and Frenchie had also did some dances for NBA 2K. So we had the moves on there since 2K16. So okay. 2K16 is they're still going on there right now. So we've influenced a lot, you know what I'm saying?
So you all did your business right then.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of the dancers didn't, to the point that people were, remember they were talking about boycotting some of these things. So yeah, was that a Bay thing that you all were able to hustle and make sure you got
Well, if it wasn't for that video, it wouldn't have been, they wouldn't have felt the need to credit dancers. Because dancers was like the easy access to anything. Like, you know, rappers could use us, everybody could use us for promotion, make their songs look hotter, everything. And that's been going on since back in the day. Everybody had background dancers, you know what I'm saying? Because if nobody's dancing to your song, then, you know, the song doesn't seem very hot. But at the end of the day, it's like, now people recognize that, you know what I'm saying? What's his name, K Camp? I respect him a lot, because he gave that little girl love, like, you know what I'm saying? He had her back for real. Like, he got her to the point where she getting big deals from Paramount, you know what I'm saying? Paramount and all of that, you know. He put her on the Shade Room and made sure she got her credit for making his song hot. You know what I'm saying? And that's love right there. And I feel like cats like, you know, E40, I have a huge relationship with him, you know what I'm saying? And for me to grow up listening to his music and tell me when to grow, that's actually tight, but Tell Me When to Go actually dropped on my birthday, you know what I'm saying? And for E40 to be my friend, I can be able to call him my friend, you know what I'm saying? That's kind of crazy to me. So that's a testament to what Gary Archer was talking about, how it used to be so hard to access these people, but over time everybody became closer and easier to access, you know?
Right. I appreciate that. And I'm glad to see that you all got the recognition on that. And that's a lesson. That's a whole show unto itself, because so many people did not. But that's a Bay thing, to right. make sure that the hustle game is tight. Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Real talk. Go ahead. Penn, you were about to say something to some of that. Early.
Yeah, because like, all right, so you got to imagine, I step into the journalism game with the camera in my hand, watching Ice Cold and all the other dancers get down at Youth Uprising. Like, that's where I really started, like, really doing journalism and documenting culture, right? And what I didn't recognize was that I was watching my partners develop their skills and develop, like, essentially what they're going to be employed to do. And they're doing it out of their passion, but they needed a space to do that. So the community centers, Ice Cold in the documentary mentioned the functions, and like the functions and how they played a huge part in not only development of like culture and like spreading the word about what the quote unquote hyphy movement is about, or like what we were doing in our communities, but they were developing their skills, they were working, they were spreading their brand, people were getting to know them, they were on the stage. And like that's how you create, I don't know, like industry, if you will. That's how definitely how you create like successful entrepreneurs. And so, yeah, I just wanted to highlight that, especially because there wasn't a lot going on at that time. You know, you talk about context, 2006, downtown wasn't jumping like it is now. Like it definitely didn't look like it does now. Those candy shop functions and stuff like that, they play a huge part.
That's a big part. You know, the gas stations and late at night and all that. Let me bring Gary back into this. Can we talk a little bit about the car part of it? You know, because that's a highlight and that's a thing that people kind of know the Bay for, you know, or sideshows and all that, which goes back all the way to the 70s. But with respect to the documentary, we often heard people say the hyphy movement was a soundtrack for what was going on in the streets, in particular around the cars. In the documentary, Larry, you show a lot of the donuts, and of course E-40 with Tell Me When to Go kind of helps bring national attention to Ghost Riding the Whip and all these other things. But Gary or Larry, let's talk about the car culture aspect of it and how important that was, at least in understanding hyphy and what was highlighted in the documentary. I'll start off with you, Gary Archer.
Let's just understand the Bay Area and Oakland in particular, right? So before the car culture even happened, we had kids that had BMX bikes, right? So you got BMX bikes and you and your friends don't have the best bikes, but you have bikes, right? So we've always been one in the city of Oakland to be very, very, I want to say inventive, very, you know, just prideful, back to the pride thing, and say, you know what? I'm just going to put some black electrical tape on my bike. I'm going to put stripes on my bike. That's where it started. Like, I'm putting stripes on my bike. And so I was like, you know what? I'm putting tinfoil on my rims, on my bike. Mm-hmm. And because like you said, in the 70s, the car culture was real big, low riders, muscle cars. Like, it wasn't on the pill out game, but it was some show up stuff, right? It was on some, you know, we players, stuntastic out here, right? So it's your pimp debut. So people like the car is a big part of it. And then it just started elevating into, my car's not that nice, but look what it do. That's where the word what it do come from. You know, he said what it do. And it's like, just because it looked like this don't mean that it don't go crazy out here, right? So the car culture kind of developed around us. You know, we're show offs, bro. So we're showing off. Like, the whole sideshow was first started off showing off. Okay, I could donut, show off. And then that's when the Ghost Rider took it to another level. Like, oh, I'm gonna get out this car real slow and let this thing ride by you by myself. Like, we just kept thinking of ways to, I want to say, expand it. Like, and it wasn't me individually, but all of us collectively just keep adding to it, like another layer. And it's like, it just kept going. All of a sudden, rims got bigger, and we're like, yo, put the big rims on the little car. Cut out the fenders. Like, what? Put speakers in the grill. We're just...
But are you surprised to see that Houston has its own car scene? And New Orleans has its own car scene, and all these other cities, you know, they all have a car aspect to what they're doing. New York, even absolutely, with a place without cars, you know, there was a time that everybody had the Jeeps, you know, and they were stunting them out. So, you know, so there's obviously uniqueness with the Bay, but were you surprised to see that car aspect was so prevalent in other places?
I would have been, except in my early age, I was very familiar with the lowrider scene, San Francisco lowrider scene, which instantly helped me understand at least the whole world likes lowriders at some aspect of it, right? Right. And then what that did to me, what it did out here is even spark this movement. Like, yo, we like cars, but we don't do the lowriders, though. We're gonna let you guys do that, and then we're gonna do this, right? Almost like the same thing. Like, people gotta understand, like, a lot of people's around this country's first cassette tapes was from the Bay Area. Like they got a lot of information without visual. Like, there was no music videos, right, in the Bay. Like, so it's like they listen to the music and almost, I don't want to be like everyone else and say they grab from us, but I'm saying that the whole world finds something and they add to it. So I was excited. Let's say excited. The Houston scene to me is the only place close. Like, they're close to the Bay the way they go crazy. But you know, I'm excited to see anyone proudful about what they're doing and where they're from, no matter how little it is. And I think the cars give someone an opportunity to do that, even if it's just a small group.
But this goes also back to what Ice Cold was talking about. all that talent, all that energy, and no major people coming in and saying, let's nurture it. I want people to think about that. The innovativeness that you show in the film, Larry, with the cars, with the dancing, all this sort of stuff, right? Had it happened in Marin somewhere, people would have been like, let's bring the best and brightest. Let's nurture this. Let's take it to the next level. What are they doing with these cars? Wow, this is an engineering feat. You know, you took a Prius and figured out how to do donuts. I'm just, you know, that's always been my dream. Can I get my Prius to do donuts? But, you know, but you figure that out, right? People want to sit you down, talk to you, and take it to the next level. But when it happens in Oakland, it's something that's criminal, right? Because in 2000, you know, around that time, people like Jerry Brown was like, how can we shut it all down? How can we take everybody to jail? How can we make this a menace? And something that, you know, 20 years later, people want to take a bow and say, this is the Bay. But back then, they were like, this is a problem and we need to shut it down and it's an embarrassment and all these different things versus nurturing and seeing that this could be something that becomes a source of pride and an attraction to the city. Because, I mean, obviously people around the planet know what we do, but on an official level, this is like, I don't want to see these turf dancers in the middle of the street. What are they doing? I don't want to see these people dancing around with these cars. I don't want to see all this music. You know, now everybody wants to bow down and say, oh yeah, that's the Bay, that's Oakland. But they didn't at the time it was coming up. And I think that's a missed opportunity, but it's also indicative of watching the very people that you scorn, you know, do something and then you want to take credit and eat with them after they blow up. And, you know, let's kind of wrap up. Larry, what do you want to add to this? And also tell people when they can see this thing with respect to the San Francisco Black Film Festival. That's going to, you know, that we're kind of highlighting that showing.
Yeah, I mean, I just, to end it, I want to thank everyone, like, in front of and behind the camera, like, all you guys, Gary, Penn, Ice Cold, like, this movie wouldn't exist without everyone that shared their story and their intimate moments in front of the camera. Like, it's documentary. Like, it's not a narrative that was written. This is your guys' story, so I appreciate you and everyone that put in volunteered time behind the camera, like, just, like, filmmakers that just, like, volunteer their time, because, so thank you for that. And, yeah, We Were Hyphy will be playing at the San Francisco Black Film Festival on June 16th. Tickets are available on sfbff.org. We'll have the link in our Instagram, We Were Hyphy, at We Were Hyphy. So please come check it out, support. And then we have more screenings coming. Stay tuned, more screenings coming this summer.
Okay, so San Francisco Black Film Festival, June 16th. Go to sfbff.org. You can tap in and on there. Appreciate it, Larry Madrigal. Good job on that. Hey, Gary, I was hoping to get your other half, D-Ray, on there, but one of the highlights in that film was your partner's photo game was years ahead of time. And I think we were talking offline. Her and Tracy Bartlow need to take photos and do something, but her photos were haunting. They were just like, I mean, that's a movie on itself. You know, because she was there. And I mean, just seeing some of those photos, it was like, it brought back memories. It was sadness. It was, she captured a lot of stuff, man. Anything you want to comment with respect to those photos?
I'm just, it makes me sad even talking about it, Dave. Like the whole, like right now, like the things D-Ray had to do, one, just being a woman in the scene and then actually carving her own niche, making this happen. People gotta understand, this is pre-digital. Like, this is film where she had to go spend money and buy film, go take the pictures, then go develop the pictures. Like, without ever, like, with that anxiety of what these pictures look like. It's not like you get to see the pictures, so it's over. Like, it's over. You go home, and now you get to look at the pictures and hope you got it, right? Mm-hmm. And I just remember that she said, I remember when she first got her first camera, my brother had a concert in San Jose, Eminem was there, and it was before his album came out. His single just came out, My Name Is, right? And I'm telling D-Ray, I'm like, yo, that guy right there is gonna be big. His name's Eminem. He just dropped a song called My Name Is. And she looked at him and went, the guy in the Budweiser t-shirt? I'm cool, and didn't take the picture, right? So then, you know, as Eminem blows up the next couple months, she's like, I'm never going to do that again. You never know who someone is or who they're going to be. I'm going to take all the pictures, and if they need the pictures, I'm going to have them. And there was something special in her where, in the midst of chaos, everything was moving in slow motion for her. Slow motion. And she, if you look at this film, it's not just famous people in this film. There's thousands of people in this film that deserve credit. Like the fans, these people's families are going to see themselves in this film and feel like crazy. I want to say over 200 people in this documentary, y'all, these 100 to 200 people are dead in these pictures that people don't even, they might notice the famous people that are passed in these pictures, but there's at least 100, 200 people in this thing that are passed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the way she freezes the moments, the way she gets the most hardest people to smile, it's just incredible, Dave. I wish I could give her more credit. We wouldn't, and she's one of the driving forces. She had the outlets from Showcase magazine, then moved on to Ozone magazine. And by becoming this historian early, that all the major outlets came to her for pictures. So she got to show off the Bay Area, right? And it makes her real proud, and me real proud too, bro. But she took it by the horns, and that's not even close to the dent of pictures, Davey. Ask go ahead, ask him how many pictures you got. Larry, how many pictures? Millions of pictures, right? Millions.
And that was only like one little flash drive, hundreds and hundreds. And like, for real, this documentary wouldn't exist without D-Ray's pictures. Like,
but you know the cool thing? It's homegrown. You didn't have to go to some big corporate company somewhere where they go, oh, we own the rights to the 40 pictures and all that. This is in our backyard, and that's a testament to us being able to tap into our own resources. Pendarvis, last word from you, and then Ice Cold, let's get your last thoughts.
And then more to it, man. I appreciate y'all for having me. Appreciate y'all for doing this. Yeah, keep the conversation going.
There you go. Thank you, Pendarvis. Ice Cold, last comments from you.
Man, I just appreciate being here, man. Like, getting a chance to actually talk and stuff, like, be heard. Like, I feel like that's heck of different, man. So I appreciate Larry, Penn, Gary, all y'all, man, for even giving me this opportunity to be here. You too, Davey, man.
Okay. And, man, when can I get my turf dance lesson? That's why I had you on the show.
Whenever you're ready, bro.
You know, I'm trying to come up like that. That's the whole purpose for you being here, bro. I wanna get those moves.
Yeah, I'm 32nd round, man. Got you.
All right, we're gonna take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. Larry Madrigal, the director of We Were Once Hyphy, Gary Archer, you know, Pendarvis Harshaw, Ice Cold. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Again, Thursday, June 16th. Will be the premiere at the SF Black Film Festival. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Soil where them rappers be getting they lingo from.
Ooh. Tell me when to go.
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 City couldn't be saved by Shonda. I slid past on the guy.
gon' bang. Talking big shit and a scraper for a hell of them. 1800, Jose Cuervo. Thought I mean, y'all don't say no. Ooh. Tell me when to go.
Tell me when to go.
Tell me when to go.
Tell me when to go. Go.
Traffic for talk a minute. To him. Let me tell y'all about this hyphy movement we got going in the back. When I say something, you say it right back at me. You smell me? We're gonna do it like this here. Ghost ride the whip.
Ghost ride the whip.
Ghost ride the whip.
Ghost ride the whip.
Now scrape,
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 scrape, scrape.
Put your stunner shades on.
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 Now gas, brake, dip,
dip.
Gas, brake,
dip,
dip.
Shake them dreads.
Shake them dreads.
Shake them dreads.
Shake them dreads.
Let me see you show your grip.
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 Now fierce,
flex,
fierce,
flex.
This,
doors open, man.
Doors open, man.
Doors open, man.
Doors open, man.
Now watch them swing, watch them swing.
Now
watch them swing, watch them swing.
Go stupid,
go,
go, go stupid,
go,
go.
Tell me when to 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 go.
Go.
Down at Hard Knock Radio. Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice pick they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Ain't nothing they made, they beats trying to eat till they're ready for the steel gray beef. Say please. Maybe it'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, unable to please. Maybe some shade on your name in the street. You go. It ain't David D.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go.
So and Maya,
who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.